This week on the Ocean Cruisers podcast, I'm having a chat with Eric from the YouTube sailing channel No Bullshit Just Sailing. Eric is known for his awesome sailing documentaries in the Northern Atlantic, taking his boat out in up to force 10 conditions to check the strength of his rig. He sails a Contessa 36 from 1976, which he spent the past decade refitting between passages, and is currently planning a trip to Greenland. If you want to come sailing with Eric, he'll be one of the skippers at the Odyssey Sailing Festival this year in December in the BVIs. You can check out the cabin availability at oceancruisers.com/odyssey. If you want to follow along with our journey aboard Voyager, check out our YouTube channel. We've been putting a bunch of videos up of the refit work that we've started doing, getting the boat ready to circumnavigate. I suppose a good place to start would be where you got Tessie and where that all happened, because you've had that boat for a very long time already. And you just kept on working on it and working on it and working on it.
Yeah. I got her 18 years ago now, 19 years ago. And I was 23 years old when I got her. Whoa. So I wanted just to have an adventure. I was a little bit bored, you know. I wanted to sail. I loved sailing at the time. And I just wanted a boat that I could live in, stay and sleep in, you know, and just sail a long distance trip with. And I found her online down in Stavanger, just out of where I live now. And I came down, and it was a salesman that was selling it to me. Right. For the owner, and he said that it basically said it was a shit boat, you know, it's old, don't buy it.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and he just tried to turn me over to the Bavaria section. No, look at the Bavarios, they're much nicer, this is the way to go, you know. And I just no, I want this one. I felt completely in love with it when I saw it. I saw it was just a perfect boat. It was run down and old and all that, but I could see the potential immediately. Brilliant. So I just bought it right off the bat, actually, just the same day, and I got it. So that's 18 amazing. Years.
18 years. You know, I've spoke to like quite a lot of people who've had Contessas in the past, and then sometimes the smaller Contessas, because they did boats in like the 20-foot range as well. But I've never heard anyone say anything negative about them, ever, who's owned them. So they must be good boats.
Yeah, they are. They have a good reputation. So it's especially the 32 footer is maybe the most sold one, most popular one.
Yeah.
And they have a few of the 35 and I think it's 38 and range up to 43, I think. And that's, but they are very rare. The 32 is the most common one.
What made you go for that? Because at 23, you hadn't done much offshore sailing, I suppose, at that point. But what made you want to get a boat like that that was capable of crossing oceans rather than something which is probably a lot better for a 23-year-old, you know, like a newer Bavaria? It's a better party boat.
Yeah, it is. I wanted to have a spacious boat, you know, but I didn't have too much money, so I needed to have an old boat. So it all came down with the price and the size of the boat. It just landed on this one, you know. That was the only one in range that I could afford, and kind of the biggest one. And I didn't know any much about it, but when I saw it, you can just see that this is a special boat, you know. I want this one, and so I sailed a couple of months later. I sailed down to South Spain with it and back up to Norway, and I just had thousands and thousands of miles with ocean passages with it. So it just goes on and on.
So when you got the boat, what was your intention with it? Because obviously you bought it when you were a fairly young man. Like most, you know, I had a boat when I was that age, but it definitely wasn't the type of boat that, you know, I'd cross oceans on. It was a tiny little thing. But like, what was the intention with it then? And like, how has that changed to now? Because, you know, you bought it, you were doing like you were sailing down south, you were sailing into the Med, nice, easy sailing. You know, now you're going pretty dangerous places with it.
Yeah, well, I started sailing at age 11, and I had these small dinghies, you know, up till I was 15. I got a little bit bigger one, and at 18, I got a 22 footer. But I didn't dare to cross ocean with these boats, you know. So I wanted to really explore the oceans. So I just needed something bigger and something heavier. It did not need to be any nice or luxurious. Just a boat to carry me, you know. Yeah, it just landed on that Contessa 35. I was really lucky to get it because they are very rare to get. So especially in Norway, I think it's the only one in Norway. Just fulfill my dreams. You know, I got on board and I sailed to Shetland. I think was the first ocean crossing I took with it. I just plunged in and just went for it, and it went fine. A lot of storms and bad weather, and every time it copes with it very well. So I feel really safe on board it. And people are asking, you should have a bigger boat and all this, but I don't see any why, because I'm alone 90% of the time, and it's a very easygoing boat to sail alone. It's not too big.
Yeah. I think as well, like, you've had it for so long and you've done so many miles in it now, it's like that feeling of assurance that you've got from that boat. Even if someone offered you a boat, you know, 10 times the price, and here, just take it on a plate, you wouldn't necessarily feel safer in it.
No.
And yeah, unless you go way bigger. And the thing is, man, the bigger the boat gets, like, the harder they are to control. Like, definitely solo sailing in rough seas, like anything above like 45, getting up to 50 feet, it is hard.
It is. I was just sailing in Greece now with a 46-footer.
Yeah.
And that's a big boat, you know. It's a ship compared to Tessie. Mm. And I sailed it with my girlfriend, and I could just see everything is 10 times heavier. The sails up and down, reefing, you know, just to winch in the mainsail. It's a half-day job just to grind on that thing until the booms get centered, you know. With my boat, you just pull the sheets and it goes and you go. Yeah. So I think maybe big, but I've been sailing a lot of big boats, you know, 40, 50, 60 feet, but when it gets past 45, it's kind of gets a little bit boring, you know. It's they're very big and safe. It's more action than a 35 footer, you know, when the wave comes. Yeah, when you get hit by a wave on a 35-footer, you know, you get soaked, splashed. It's action. It's fun. You feel fresh. And on a big boat, that doesn't happen that much. And it's just more people adventurous.
Most weird, people prefer that. I know. So you got this boat when you were in like your early 20s, and you went to the south of Spain, which is like a normal thing for someone in their early 20s to do. I think everybody would do that if they got a sailboat in like Northern Europe. But where did the like asphyxiation come with going to more remote places and, you know, waiting for storms basically to then go out and test the boat? Because that's something pretty adventurous.
Yeah, well, much happened and developed when I got when I sailed down to Spain. It was 1.5 year. I was working on a supply ship, 1 month on and off.
Oh, nice!
And during the free time, I was sailing to Spain. So it took 1.5 year. And I had my girlfriend the first months on that trip, but then she dumped me basically
because she didn't shower because you were on a small boat.
She didn't share the same passion to say the least. So I went down alone after her. Then I sailed back home to Haugesund. And during that time, I did so many miles solo sailing, and I saw that I really could do this, manage this with this boat, and I could see how far I actually could get just being alone and the freedom that comes with it, rather than having a crew. You know, everybody wants to go different directions, and everything is the discussion. And when you're alone, you can just point your bow wherever you want and you just go. And that's when I found out that I live in a perfect spot in Norway, the west coast of Norway, and at the ocean. And if you go westwards, you have Shetland and all these beautiful islands, just 36 hours away sailing. So I decided I really wanted to explore all of those islands. And so I did. So, you know, Shetland, Fair Isle, Orkney Islands. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's like really beautiful places. And the people there are so nice. And it's just another world than Norway. And it's only 36 hours away. So it's paradise for me.
Yeah. You took this trip down to the south of Spain. I mean, obviously, like the I suppose the experience is going to be a bit more commercial once you get into the Med, because it's towns and cities and anchorages that have got charter boats and stuff like that. What attracts you to that part of the world? Is it like the solitude of it, or is it just like the landscape, the beauty, the people? Like, what makes you want to spend more time up there than go somewhere more sunny?
It's well, first of all, I'm from Norway and I like cold weather. I deal very poorly with when it gets really hot. It was really hot down in Spain when I sailed down there. It was about 38, 40 degrees Celsius on the worst days, and I just shut down. So just sailing in the north, the freshness, the coldness, and the environment and the challenge with it. It's just I love every part of it, and that's something that you don't get in hot weather in Spain. You know, it's not by far the same challenge.
Yeah, so, not at all. Yeah, that's true. What is the main challenge that you have? Like, obviously, it's pretty obvious that what you're doing is like preparing for something, and you're trying to gain a bit more experience here or there. Like, what is the ultimate challenge that you'd want to face?
I'm Greenland is one of them. I want to sail in between icebergs and just explore it and see how that really is. So I've been trying 3 years in a row now, but something has gone wrong every time. So I'm going to do it the fourth time next year. And I can't say that that's the time I'm going to do it, because you don't know. That's the exciting part with sailing. You really don't know how things are going to turn out. So, but you just have to try again and again and again. And I believe that if you try enough times, you will get there eventually.
Yeah.
So that's my goal now, just to reach Greenland next year. That's my sole goal.
Sail through icebergs. That is quite a cool thing to do. It's something I want to do, just never in my own boat.
Yeah, right.
Look forward to doing it in someone else's. Yeah. What's the situation with sailing up there? Like, I've never really looked into it. I've watched some stuff that you've done with some of the sailing. I follow a company called 59 North. They do like expeditions up there and stuff, which looks really cool. What are the main challenges with it? Because obviously you've got like icebergs, and they are completely unpredictable, but it's super stormy up there. I know that the weather can get like nasty real quick. Like, what are the challenges with doing that route? Obviously, you had like some physical challenges because you got COVID and all that when you've tried to do it before. But what are the challenges from like a sailing perspective?
I think it's the weather. It's changed so much, as you say, that it can be stormy, it can be this and that, and it's always something. You know, it's not very peaceful. It's not a peaceful place to sail. And I think it's also the feeling of kind of surviving. You have to really take care of yourself and the boat to survive in those areas. It's kind of scary at times, but that's also the challenge with it. I like to test the fears and to be scared, and just to I think it's healthy for your body just to put yourself through some shit and get out on the other side in one piece. That's the cool thing about it, I think. Just to do it, don't cope with your fears.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, definitely. It's good practice for the mind as well, isn't it? Like, mind over matter, and like figuring out what you can push yourself to. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So just talking about Tessie a bit. So this boat, I mean, you've had this boat for a long time and you've done like a lot of refit work. As far as I've seen, I know you've like re-engined it. You've had all new sails. But what was the boat like when you first got it, and how have you modified it over time to be suitable for like the type of cruising that you're doing now?
I have, well, the hull and keel and you know, the mast is the same, 18 years old. I've run her aground really bad once, and I destroyed the rudder, so I got a new rudder on her.
Okay.
And reinforced it, and yeah, new engine, as you say, and all the sails were just worn out when I bought her. I had 12 sails, I think, so it was this huge pack of sails on board, but it was like tips, you know. It was just dissolving when it hits the spreaders and stuff. It just
they're real dissolving sails.
just and they ripped you know to pieces, and I have to sew them back together, and then ripped again and sew them back. I didn't have money, you know, so I just have to do it that way. But it's the love for sailing that kept it going, you know. If you have to do it like that, that's the way you have to do it. So you just have to cope with it. But later on, I got help from friends and family to buy a couple of new sails, and I just slowly built her up year by year. So today she's in perfect condition. Everything is up to date, and it's amazing to. I never dreamt of seeing her in this condition 10 years ago. So so that's also why I choose to keep her year after year, because it's a great boat.
Yeah, I mean, for a boat, the mid 1970s, I think the boat is
76.
So yeah, 76. Yeah, I mean, so for like a 1976 boat, even a Contessa, it's like so well maintained, and it's like had so much work done to it, ready for like offshore sailing. I don't think there's going to be that many of them like that even available. Actually, like you've done so much work to it.
Yeah, I have. It's a lot. Yeah, it's perfect for solo sailing now with you know with the hydro vane and the best autopilot system and solar charging and this hydro generatic charging, and it's got all the gear for long range. It's a small boat, but it's a safe boat, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I've got a question. So, like, you did. So you're like an ambassador for Raymarine. And you put like a lot of their latest stuff in your boat. How much of a difference did that make to your cruising? Because you got like the full system, like radar, AIS, the different screens and all that type of stuff. Like, what type of difference did that make? Because most people will just take the boat out with like a navionics chart, and that's pretty much it now.
Yeah. Well, I've started out with the boat with absolutely no navigation. I've used paper charts and an old handheld GPS. that's the way I got down to Spain and up again, you know. But that's fine, you know. I think it's you're more focused when you just have a paper chart on the GPS. Your eyes are more, you're more focused. But with all this new equipment, it's absolutely amazing equipment, and the boat basically steers itself. Yep. But I can see that I'm less focused on the navigation when I let all the Raymarine equipment steer the boat. You know, of course I do focus on navigation, but a lot less. I think a lot more bad things can happen if you have too much electronics in it and you don't pay attention that much, because you just automatically trust the systems.
Yeah,
it's both very good and it can be bad. So it's. It's a balance, I guess.
I think as long as you're still paying attention, like I've noticed pretty much in most cases, like still when you open applications or your chart plotter, like they will still tell you, do not use this as your main source of navigation, which I find crazy, because if you've got it, why wouldn't you use it? You know, you've made so much money, of course you would.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you just still have to pay attention to like what's actually going on around you. I think it's easy to like have a computer that tells you everything and then you completely forget the natural environment and like what it can throw at you. So yeah, I think as long as you're still paying attention, it's just great stuff to add to your boat.
Yeah, of course. But when you're sailing alone as well, then you automatically pay attention because you are alone. I think I have had crew on board, but every time I've had been having crew on board, things have almost gone wrong every time. Because you trust people that they are not that used to sailing that I am, so they don't see the potential danger out in the horizon that I know that might be a danger.
Yeah,
and when you trust them, they stare the thing straight into a old platform, you know, because it's because they don't know what it is that is dangerous. So.
Yeah, you know, I always say, like, it depends on the type of sailor. Like, some captains like to be, you know, the boss on the boat, and they like to tell everybody and order everyone. But, like, in my experience, it's like, if you've ever got anybody sailing with you on the boat, try your best to find people who are better at sailing than you and have them on the boat. So, like, because you need that safety net, don't you? You can't, you know, it's difficult if everyone on the boat, you're responsible for their lives, and they, like, literally cannot do anything to help you if you needed it.
Sure. Yeah, I've done a lot of ocean, you know, this ocean sailing courses from Norway to Shetland. And I had paying crew and absolutely greenhorns, never sailed before. You needed to stay awake 24/7 because if you didn't pay attention, they would start doing very weird things with the boat.
Very strange things with the boat.
Things would happen.
Yeah, just sailing it in the wrong direction. Yeah, mentioning my friend before, James, who's the YouTube channel Zingaro. He's been doing charters recently, and he's been taking aboard people who, you know, some have some experience, but some have absolutely no experience. And he's doing like these week-long charters, like really good experience. He's a good sailor. But yeah, he's saying like when you take people on your boat and the passengers and the charters and they don't know what you're doing, it's like you are literally awake all the time. Like even when you're on anchor, you have to be aware because there's nobody else on the boat who can, you know, give you a heads up if you might be dragging or if someone else is moving around an anchorage. Like it's just all on you.
Yeah, it is. They don't understand the situation like if you're experienced. That's fully understandable, you know. It's part of the responsibility of the captain, but you can't trust anyone in that situation.
Very true. So how was the your charter experience? Because obviously you're like a cold-blooded Viking, and you went to Greece for a week on a fancy new production boat. not where most people would expect to see you, I imagine. But how was it?
No, it was great. It was hot, you know. I was struggling a little bit, but it was in May, June, so it wasn't too bad. So it was fine for me, and it was really nice to see all the islands. And we had some wind on the three first days, but the four last days of that week, it was just completely still. There was a lot of engine. So, but it's fine, you know. But I have to say that I missed the north when I was in those waters, but it's nice to have been there and seen, you know, Mykonos and all these beautiful islands. It's a really cool experience for sure.
I mean, like the islands that you used to sail into, I'd say are probably more beautiful. You just can't jump in the water as easily. Whereas I suppose you could, well, maybe you can. Are you one of these Norwegians that goes like ice diving?
No, I'm not. I'm not that tough.
Right. My brother-in-law does that. He lives in Norway. I can't remember. Not Oslo, the other big city, the more industrial city. I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, he gets drunk and he goes like diving underneath the ice in these lakes. It's highly irresponsible. It sounds crazy, but that's what he spends his time doing. But yeah, I mean, you basically enjoyed it. You liked being in some warmer climates and doing some anchorage hopping.
Yeah. The story, you know, history is beautiful down there with all the Greek gods and all the mythology. So it's a lot to see and learn. So that part of it was really great. But one week, it was 7 days was enough. It was, then I was ready to get back in the colder waters again.
it's a super interesting place from like a historical perspective. Like when I've tried to explain, because I've sailed around Greece a few times, and like our boat's there now and we're going to be cruising there this year and next year, it's like to be able to drop anchor next to something that's like, you know, 3,000 years old and is claimed to be, you know, the temple of God. Like that's quite an impressive thing, isn't it? Like, you know, it to is. Drop anchor near something like that, it's just amazing. Can't comprehend it.
Yes, it's unbelievable. So I'm really glad I got the opportunity to see it. So I will hopefully go down next year if they want me back.
Yeah.
So we could do it again.
Well, we've got the BVIs in December. That's going to be warm, mate. I might struggle with that one. We'll have cold beers on the boat, but might get a bit hot down there.
So December, that's the high season.
I think so. I don't know if it's like the busiest time to sail around the BVIs, but I know it's definitely in season. Maybe not, because December is like Christmas time or something, but I don't have a clue. I could be talking nonsense. But I know it's hot, although it's definitely not as hot as like Spain in summer.
No. Oh, I'm looking very much forward to it. It's going to be great. So no worries.
Yeah, we'll get through it, man. I think some of the boats have air conditioning on them. So, maybe we'll try and get all the ACs diverted into a cold room so you can survive over there in those barren temperatures.
Yeah, it's going to be a sight.
Yeah. Well, listen, what's the next thing for Tessie then? Like, what is the next, I know you don't like to say, but I'm sure you can say, what is the next passage that you're planning at the moment?
Well, I'm preparing for the Hebrides, the west coast of Scotland in 10th nice. Of July, 1 month. So that's the plan. And it's going to be a 3-4 weeks trip. And I'm also going to the east coast of Scotland, you know, through a channel called Caledonian Channel.
Oh, yeah.
And you can go straight to Scotland. And then I want to visit, you know, this Viking place where the Viking entered England the first time. Oh, the beach. Oh, what's the name?
On the east coast.
East coast. Lind. I should know this. Oh, shit. Completely forgot it. Lindisfarne. Lindisfarne.
Right, that's okay. The so that's yeah, where they that, first arrived.
Yeah, that's the first point they arrived. So I want to go there, like a final closure of Scotland, and then I go back to Norway after that.
It's quite an interesting way to finish off the trip, actually. Let's see how my people killed all these people years and years ago. Yeah. It's quite funny, Marty. Mate, I've got a good friend called Chris, actually, who does like research and development stuff for the marine industry. I'll put you in touch with him because he's cruised for years around the Scottish Isles. It just sounds amazing, like going into all the little distilleries, trying all the local whiskies and scotch and all that type of stuff. Like, it just sounds like a pretty, pretty amazing place to sail. Cold, but beautiful.
Yeah, just I would like it. Perfect.
Yeah, perfect for you. Sweet, mate. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time and sharing a bit about your story. That's real cool. And I look forward to sailing with you in December. It's going to be good.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Sweet ass.